Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. After reaching Greece, Paul became a fearless witness for Christ in a pagan culture. He explained the true God to philosophers used to having many gods. Today, we see Paul as a role model in how to confront the world with the gospel. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, we continue a series on the legacy of a converted man. We're in Athens, atop Mars Hill, watching Paul defend his faith. Join Dr. Lutzer now with Witnessing for Christ.
We live in a very pluralistic world, don't we, here in America? Yesterday, I Googled spirituality into Google and discovered that there is no clear definition of what spirituality really is. And the reason for that is because we have today so many different views as to what spirituality might be entailed, what might be entailed in spirituality, and there is no given core of doctrine or belief that unifies the idea. There are so many people who say, and some of you may be saying, I'm into spirituality, but I'm not into religion. I don't like anything formal, but I am a spiritual person. So today in America, what it is popular to do is, like a smorgasbord, you take a little bit of Hinduism, you like a few things from Eckhart Tolle, you throw in some angel theology, and of course, some sayings of Jesus, and you have a concoction that is just right for you, filled, of course, with your own ideas. You may be here today thinking that. You may say to yourself, I'm content with my own view of God, with my own view of who I am, and I don't need anything else. You know, the Apostle Paul, when he was in Athens, encountered a culture just like that. It's the 17th chapter of the book of Acts, and this happens to be number 3 in a series of messages titled The Legacy of a Converted Man. Here was a man steeped in Judaism, but he ends up being the most grateful and most powerful man to spread Christianity in the early century. And we have to, for time's sake, not speak too much about the context, but to plunge right in. We're in Acts chapter 17. He has been in Thessalonica. He stirred up a number of people there. He had to leave. They took him to Berea. Some people who hated him came to Berea, and so he ends up in Athens. Acts chapter 17, verse 16. Now, while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, there were others who were going to join him. His spirit was provoked within him as he saw that the city was full of idols. Let's stop there. Our task as apologists, that is, defending Christianity and defending the faith, has to begin with concern. He was provoked. As he saw this city full of idols, the great city of Athens, a Roman said that it was easier to find a god in Athens than it was to find a man. He sees the city given over to idolatry, and his heart is deeply moved within him for two reasons. First of all, because he was concerned about the people themselves. I mean, these were people who really didn't know God. They didn't know his forgiveness. They certainly did not understand grace. And that should really trouble you and me today also in our culture. There's a second reason, undoubtedly, and that is that, to quote the words of Henry Martin, who was a great missionary among Muslims, he said, I cannot live unless I see Jesus glorified. So as Paul surrounded himself with the Athenians and saw what was happening, He knew that this was a culture that wasn't glorifying Jesus, and he was deeply moved. It was a culture something like a waitress that Rebecca and I encountered last week, who said that, yes, she believed in Jesus, she read the New Testament, but she also read the Gnostic Gospels, and she believed in that Jesus too, and she had her own little religion. But Jesus, the Jesus of the New Testament, was not exalted. I ended by telling her, someday when you're overwhelmed with guilt and you don't know where to turn, it's the Jesus of the New Testament that you're looking for. Are our hearts concerned about our city and our community that does not know Jesus as Savior and Lord? And then Paul had a two-pronged strategy. You'll notice it says, verse 17, so he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the devout persons. And how did he reason? He reasoned from the scriptures. That's exactly what the previous verses say when he was in Thessalonica and elsewhere. He reasoned from the scriptures. But that wasn't the end of his strategy. You'll notice it says that he also met people in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be there. Now, in that context, he did not begin with the scriptures, as we shall see in a moment. And you and I have to understand that when we are in church, there is one strategy, and that is the proclamation from the scriptures, believing that most people who attend here, and probably most people who listen, have respect for the Bible and believe the Bible. So every Sunday here at the Moody Church, we preach the Bible. But if you go to State in Madison, and you begin to ask people there what they think about Jesus or God, and you quote the Bible, they may dismiss it and say, you know, it's a book of fairy tales. Why should I believe it? So the Apostle Paul had a different strategy for folks like that. It's interesting that this month at Moody Church happens to be Outreach Month. And what we must do is to begin to think in terms of the marketplace, where you work, the people you encounter on the train or in a restaurant or on a plane, wherever you may be, you represent Christ, and there are people out there that we need to be able to graciously encounter their experience and where they are at, and then eventually, as God helps us, to get to Jesus. Now, you'll notice that there are two kinds of philosophers there in Athens. Verse 18, some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers also conversed with him. The Epicureans, they believed that matter was the final reality. When you died, there was no existence beyond the grave. So naturally, they would think, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So Epicureans are generally identified with pleasure, though they did emphasize the higher pleasures. But they did not believe in the existence of spirit or God in any meaningful sense. The Stoics, they believed that there was a spirit world. Their God was the world. Pantheism, they'd have felt very comfortable with various views that are found in the Eastern religions, with views such as Hinduism. When you die, your soul is absorbed in the great oneness of the universe, and you disappear, but you may appear later. But the point is that there is a spirit world, and they believe that the highest duty of man is indeed duty. You do your duty. That's why we speak about being stoical. You're committed to duty, whether you feel like it or not. So here you have two opposing views in Athens, and they listen to Paul, and they don't get it. Look at what happens. They say, now I'm still in verse 18, what does this babbler have to say? Others said, he seems to be a preacher of foreign divinities, because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection. And that they brought him to the Areopagus, which is Mars Hill, saying, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting, for you bring some strange things to our ears." My fellow Christians, you and I have the responsibility in this culture to bring strange things to people's ears. Things that they are not hearing anymore, since we live in a post-Christian era, no longer a Christian consensus, and that's our calling. And unfortunately, we're oftentimes so intimidated. This past week, I preached 10 times. Now, what were you doing last week? Don't worry, it was a piece of cake. I preached the same message every morning. Message twice, so that means I only preach really five times because I repeated it in a different location. But there was another speaker there who made this statement. Another Bible teacher says he is more concerned about the church than he is the Supreme Court. Wow. Folks, we have the treasure of God, and we are so intimidated by our culture and all the various gods that are out there. I hope today that there are skeptics listening to this message. And by the way, if you're an Epicurean, the closest identification we would have with you today is today's modern atheists. This is such a separate subject that I can't get into, but if you are an atheist and you argue for atheism, you are assuming of necessity. You're assuming the existence of God. You're stealing all kinds of presuppositions about God as you stand and you argue for it. But how does Paul approach his culture? And along the way, how do we learn to approach our culture? And how do we get this strange doctrine that people need to hear, but they find very foreign, very archaic in today's pluralistic world? What I've decided to do is just go through his speech there and to delineate some concepts of God that he got across, and that eventually, of course, he did get to Jesus. But how did Paul do it? I'd like to read a few verses of his sermon, verse 22. "So Paul, standing in the midst of the Areopagus, said, 'Men of Athens, I perceive that in every way you are very religious.'" He doesn't condemn them for that. Man is incurably religious. He gropes after God, as Paul will point out. "And as I passed along and observed the objects of your worship, I found also an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you, the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands as though he needs anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God in the hope that they might feel their way toward him and find him. Yet he is actually not far from each one of us, because," you know, he quotes now two poets of Greek, that is Greek poets. "For in him we live and move and have our being, even as some of your own poets have said, for indeed we are his offspring." Just that far for a moment. What are some of these characteristics of God? First of all, a God is knowable. He can be known. The Apostle Paul says, "Do you see that idol? And isn't it interesting that he who is distressed over the idols found an idol that becomes the touchstone, the jumping off point in his speech? You see, the Athenians had so many idols, but they thought, what if we're missing some god and he gets angry with us? Let's put up an altar to an unknown god, and maybe he'll be appeased, even though we don't know his name. So Paul says, he's the one I'm preaching to you. And I'm going to tell you that you can know him. My friend today, did you know that knowledge of God is possible? Even in the Old Testament, the people who know their God shall be strong and do exploits. Jesus, of course, said, and this is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. We cannot know God exhaustively, but we can know him truly. May I commend to you today the fact that the greatest search that you should ever have in your life is to come to know God, and before this sermon is over, you'll find out how. So Paul says, you think you've overlooked a God? I'm going to tell you about the true God. He is knowable. Secondly, he is the creator, the God who created, he says, the world. What is that? Verse 24, and everything in it. Now, immediately when he mentions creation, that means he's talking about a unique God. He cuts out all of the idols of the Greek culture. And the minute that you talk about God as creator, immediately you leave behind your own little conceptions of God and your own little belief in your ideas. God is creator. Did you know that in heaven we're going to worship him for that? Blessed are you, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and they were created. So he says, this is the God I'm proclaiming to you. You'll notice what he says. He says, he made the worlds, which immediately means omnipotence. And by the way, he does not dwell in temples made by hands. Some of us have had the privilege of being at Mars Hill, actually standing on Mars Hill. What you do is you look up, and there is the Parthenon. There is the great cathedral, the great temple to the goddess Athena, still standing today. I mean, this is a marvel. The Greeks' ability in art and architecture and philosophy, huge. I mean, this was begun 400 years before the time of Jesus, and it's still standing today. Imagine that. But he's saying God doesn't exist there. You don't go to that temple. Of course, you can pray to God in a temple, but it's not as if God is localized in this temple. God exists everywhere. He is omnipotent. He created the world, and he's also omniscient, and he's omnipresent. He is everywhere. And if you think he's really hard to find, Paul is going to say in a few moments that in him we live and move and have our being. So Paul says God is creator. Verse 25, God is independent. Now, many of you may not have known this. You'll notice it says in verse 25, nor is he served by human hands as though he need anything, since he himself gives to all men life and breath and everything. Do you remember a few years ago, I think here in Chicago, on the bus it said, in the beginning, man created God. That should have sparked a laugh from people. Paul is saying that the opposite is true. God created you, and guess what? He didn't need you. Isn't that wonderful? God can get along without us quite well, actually. Now, many evangelicals will teach you this. Maybe you learned this in Sunday school. Why did God create us? Well, it's this way. God was lonely. And he decided to create some angels and people because he needed that fellowship. Actually, that's not true. God has need of nothing. He existed as a Trinity, fully and completely satisfied. The Trinity means we don't believe in a contradiction, three gods, etc. No, God has three centers of consciousness, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Each loved the other and had fellowship with the other, and God was content. Then why did he create, as kind of an overflow of his glory and a new way in which his glory would be revealed, which is the ultimate purpose of all things? So God doesn't need us. He's certainly not dependent on us. He was fully satisfied, and now Paul goes on to say he is purposeful, and by that I mean, verse 26, he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on the face of the earth, having determined the allotted periods, that has to do with the seasons, and even the boundaries of their dwelling place. My friend, this is Pastor Lutzer, and the sermon that you have just listened to is an exposition of the Apostle Paul's sermon as he stood on Mars Hill and preached the gospel to the Athenians. Now, it's been my privilege to stand on Mars Hill from time to time as I've led tours to Greece and Turkey, at least a couple of times. But how would you like to go to Europe and see the sights of the Reformation? Somehow, when I am there, I always like to think of the history, I like to think of instruction, and to take back from my experience some learning that will continue to help me and bless me. Now, if you'd like to visit the sites of the Protestant Reformation in Europe, you can go to our website, moodymedia.org, and find all the information you need. God willing, this tour is going to take place this coming June. We'll not only be going to sites of the Reformation, but also some Nazi sites, some World War II sites in Munich, and we go to Hitler's Eagle's Nest, for example, and then visit Switzerland. Well, all that with the view of helping us to appreciate our history. But back to the Apostle Paul, the thing that I marvel about as he is here on Mars Hill is the way in which he was able to take the culture of the Athenians, beginning with the unknown God and then sharing with them the true God. And you know, you and I have the same responsibility today. How about witnessing today for Jesus? When you think of the Apostle Paul, he had more impact on Christianity than anyone who ever lived except Jesus.
Erwin Lutzer on how Paul has much to say to us today.
He will give us insight how to relate to a culture that is pagan, how to be able to accept persecution, and how to be bold in a moment of American history when we are shamed into silence.
It all began on a road to Damascus.
Jesus comes and he says, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" Saul answered and said, "Who are you, Lord?" And he said, "I'm Jesus who you're persecuting."
Paul's new faith led to a life of difficulty.
I'm going to begin by talking about Paul's suffering. But then as we progress, when we get to the end, I'm going to lay out some propositions, some foundational truths for a biblical view of persecution and suffering.
From Paul, we learn that witnessing begins with concern.
Now, while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him as he saw that the city was full of idols, and his heart is deeply moved within him.
Learn from the life of Paul as you hear six messages designed to encourage your faith. We'll send a CD album as our way of saying thanks for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Call right now at 1-888-218-9337. That's 1-888-218-9337. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Reach us online at rtwoffer.com. That's rtwoffer.com. When you stand on Mars Hill in Athens, you're standing where history happened. Next time, more on Paul's discourse with Greek philosophers. Thanks for listening. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is sponsored by the Moody Church.